Happy New Year and welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Michigan State's head football coach Mark D'Antonio probably has a big bonus coming his way after their win at the Rose Bowl, but most of us will slog through the next year without the benefit of a windfall. Most of us will have to make do without the glory or the money of big-time college sports. And some of us, anyway, we'll resolve for the new year to do a better job of setting a budget. A few years ago, Brian O'Connor found himself with a new job, sure, but also living and working in the Detroit area, what he described as the ground zero for the financial crisis of 2008. He made the best of it as the personal finance editor and syndicated Funny Money columnist at the Detroit News by composing a series of columns about cutting his own monthly living expenses by $1,000. The columns were so popular, he turned them into a book. It's called The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. He joins us today by phone from Detroit to talk about the classic New Year's resolution of getting one's financial house in order. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
And is there government cheese? Is there still government cheese available?
Yes, there okay. There is. I actually had to check on it. It was one of the fact-checking things I had to do when I did the book. And it's still out there if you want to go sign up with, I guess, the USDA program. But it isn't in my life, and it doesn't have to be in anybody else's. Unless of course you really hit a rough patch, in which case go get all the cheese you can get, because this is why we pay taxes.
After cutting $1,000 a month and writing a book about it, do you have a New Year's resolution involving your budget this year, or is it all over with?
You know, I think you got to look at it like trying to keep your kitchen clean. It's just an ongoing process. You know, the kitchen is never clean. Mm-hmm. It just is less dirty than it was. And so my goal is to really get back in, tidy up a few loose ends, and get finally a really formal budget. But I'll be able to do that because we're going to do an actual 10-week $1,000 challenge on starting next Monday on AOL.com.
So anybody can participate in this?
Anybody can participate, and it doesn't have to be $1,000. Like you said, what I did is I took my 10 largest spending categories, and each week in the newspaper column, I tried to cut $100 out of each one to get to $1,000. And, you know, like the first week, I could only find about $43. So that wasn't a very auspicious beginning.
But you had to please your readers.
Well, and I said, you know, my editors were like, well, that makes it believable, but you're going to get the $1,000, right? And I was like, well, I don't know. I mean, I'd come in every Monday and sit down, and, you know, by Thursday night I had to find $100. But, you know, but the important thing is if anybody is doing this as a New Year's resolution, is saving money isn't really enough of a goal. So the first thing you've got to do is stop and think about, what do you really want to save the money for? Is it because you're having trouble paying certain types of bills? Is it because you need to come up with money to cover an unexpected expense? Maybe your healthcare premium went up, or you've got a kid heading to college, or is it you want to take a vacation in France? And then you need to set a time frame and put a dollar sign, you know, some kind of budget on it, so that it will sort of give you something more than just I'm spending less money. You know, when we go on a diet, we want to lose 20 pounds. Usually we want to lose 20 pounds in time for our high school reunion next week. But, you know, you need something concrete. You need a time frame. Just saving money is kind of like saying, well, I'm just going to eat less. Well, you know, you can eat less and not necessarily lose weight. But so you need a deadline and a dollar sign. And then, you know, you just go to it. People who say, for instance, I want to get my finances under control, are probably people who are just going to give up. You're going to go on the financial equivalent of a crash diet, you know, the grapefruit diet or something. Mm-hmm. And one thing that people do is they say, well, I need a budget. And so they get bogged down in that. What do I use? Do I use Mint.com? Do I use Quicken? Do I use a spreadsheet? Do I use any one of the other 10 services out there? I have to find all my bank statements for the last year. You know, and they're tracking down every penny like, you know, a Kardashian looking for a new husband, you know. And they just throw up their hands and go, no, and then they add up their credit card bills and their debts and go, oh my God, I give up, mm-hmm. you know. And it's like the equivalent of somebody who's, you know, buys a home gym and then hangs their laundry on it, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, my thing is, if you're making that resolution, you have a reason. And you know, make that a good reason. And if it's that you're losing sleep because you didn't know how to pay the Visa bill last week, yeah. fine. And if it's, I want to take my wife, you know, to the best restaurant in town for our anniversary, you know, that's just as valid. It doesn't matter. And then just start cutting your spending and put money aside for that. You don't need the perfect budget. You need to solve your problem now. And then use that as you walk through what you're spending and thinking about where you're sending your money. Then you start to get the pretty good building blocks of a budget. But, you know, you don't need a color-coded Excel sheet, you know, that where you sit there. I mean, I've done this, and I've spent 20 minutes going, well, how do I categorize this magazine subscription?
Right.
Because it's for, you know, journalism. Well, so is it a work-related expense or is it a subscription? Or?
Well, let me ask you this. How did you come up with the goal of 1,000? How did you decide that was right for you?
Oh, because I was just dumb enough and thought it would make a great headline.
Okay, yeah. So how do you figure, I guess you did kind of just answer my question then. If you have to have a goal and then you have to have a time frame. And so my goal is I want to raise, you know, $3,000 for whatever, tuition, then.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what a great goal for anybody, if you don't have one, if you need one,
yeah.
and everybody can think of something, is everybody probably has debt they need to pay off, especially after the holidays. And you don't want to think about that big number, that $3,000 or $5,000, or God help you if there's more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just treat it like another bill. But say, okay, look, you know, I have a $5,000 Visa bill, and so I want to pay that off in 2 years, be debt-free. So you need to find about $300 a month to do that if you have a typically high-rate credit card. Actually, $300 a month would get you a little faster than 24 months. But go find that $300, and now it's going to be like you have no credit card payment. Because that's money you were already spending anyway. Now you've freed up to pay off your credit card, and it's not really going to hurt other parts of your life.
Well,
you know,
You decided that it won't.
Right. I mean, it's a little bit of a mental mm-hmm. of a mental trick, but it's money that was already going for other things that you're mm-hmm. just redirecting at that, and it will make, you know, paying that off a little bit less painful.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Brian O'Connor. He is personal finance editor for the Detroit News and author of a new book. It is called, and I'm going to get to that right now, The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. Brian, you mentioned earlier that you're starting the $1,000 Challenge online on AOL. Can you send us a link to that so we can post that on our website?
Absolutely. As soon as we get the first one up next Monday, we'll send it along
to
you guys.
Sounds good. I was interested. You keep track of your budget in part by using cash. How does that work?
Well, that was great. You know, one of the things that I talk about is the complexity of, you know, having to worry about every nickel or penny or where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And for certain parts of your budget, it's easier to just go to cash and then not worry about every little $6 receipt or $3.50 receipt or wherever it's going to be. So for us, it was things like personal spending for me and my wife, and also our entertainment, and also for our babysitters, because we had like multiple babysitters that we were writing checks to. And I think one of the sitters was using it like a deferred savings account, and she would wait until she had, you know, 30 checks piled up and then go to the bank. And, you know, you've forgotten about these $12 and $20 and $40 checks. And
uh-huh.
then they suddenly all hit your account at once. And maybe you overdraft or something. And the other thing is, you know, tracking, like, your personal spending money. So now you're, you know, you're having to download these transactions and go on the computer and go, you know, Starbucks, personal spending, and lunch, $6.50, mm-hmm. you know, personal spending. It's much easier to just give yourself a piece of cash and say, do I really need to know where this money goes by next payday? It's my personal spending money. How did you figure
how much that would be?
I kind of looked at, you know, we hadn't really tracked that too well. So I just kind of looked at what I could sort of figure out we were doing, and we just kind of came up with a number. It should probably really be higher if we wanted to cover all our personal spending.
Uh-huh.
But it's a good basis, and that's the thing to look at is you don't need to be perfect. I don't know where every dime of that money goes, especially my wife's spending, and I don't want to know because it's kind of like the don't ask, don't tell of your personal finances.
Mm-hmm.
I can just put that single amount in every payday and not be worried about it. It's a budgeted amount. And you know what? If one of us needs something more because we need to buy clothes or we need to buy this or that or the other thing, then you adjust. The danger of one of these things is you sit down with a piece of paper and you look at your paycheck and you figure out, well, I'm going to spend this much on this and this on this and this on this and this on this. And then you try and take that little sheet of paper out into the real world and good luck.
Because mm-hmm.
That's just not the way it goes. Look at what you're spending now, see what you can do about it, and then just adjust as you go on.
Did you ever do what I've heard some people do is put the envelopes on the refrigerator and save cash that way for, say, you want a new pair of boots or you want to get a new pair of headphones or whatever it might be?
I kind of did a weird version of that for Christmas. I use a flexible medical spending account,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, a tax deferred account, where you put in so much per week at work and then you pay your medical expenses out of that. And then it's refunded to you. So I basically use that as our Christmas club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So at the end of December or the beginning of December, when we start the Christmas whole shebang,
mm-hmm.
We have one paid off credit card that we use. And basically then I pay that off with my flex refund. And then it's basically, you know, just like taking an old-fashioned Christmas club withdrawal.
Yeah, I remember those, sadly. My guest is Brian O'Connor, Detroit News columnist, personal finance columnist, and also a syndicated columnist. The name of his column is called, what is it called, Funny Money?
It's Funny Money when it's syndicated through the Tribune Content Agency.
Okay. And he's author of a new book. It's called The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. If you have a question or comment, you want to share your New Year's financially related resolution, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about that New Year's resolution. It has to do with your pocketbook. What sort of resolution did you make this year, if any, regarding your finances? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. My guest is Brian O'Connor. He's the personal finance editor and columnist at the Detroit News. We're talking about the topic of his new book, The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. You became quite a coupon clipper there for a while. How did that work? Are you still at it?
Yes and no. That's one of the two things that people should think about, especially when they're doing, you know, resolutions. because I've seen some interesting stuff lately, and it turns out that willpower is kind of a finite resource for people, especially with how many decisions and how many times they have to exercise their willpower. And when it comes down to this kind of thing, it really translated to there were parts of this where I could cut my spending. I made one decision, one phone call, and then I had permanent ongoing savings, like when I changed all my cable and internet and long distance and all that stuff. I saved like $140, and I've been saving $140 every month since then with me having to do nothing. Mm-hmm. I can just go be the natural lazy slob that I am, right? And the money still piles up. And so that's why I chose to focus on your biggest recurring monthly bills, because mm-hmm. every dollar you save there is really $12 a year. Then you get to the lifestyle things, which are where you're going to need your willpower. So that's things like grocery shopping, personal spending, entertainment, stuff where you're actually going to have to make decisions on an ongoing basis. So I was really happy with the with changing over to more of a grocery method, where before we just sort of made up a menu of what we felt like and what was in season, and you go to the store and you buy the groceries because that's what food costs, right? And that was when we were young and stupid. And now the whole idea is to let's stock up on things that we use when they are the cheapest. Because most things in the grocery store will go to sort of a rock bottom price about every 13 weeks or so. So if you make a lot of chili like I do, and the Rotel, tomatoes go on sale, mm-hmm. 2-for-1, buy a bunch. And then you plan your menu out of your pantry and your freezer instead of just like, oh, I don't know, I feel like maybe strawberry chicken this week,
Wow.
And so I found a service that was really great for that. That's called The Grocery Game, and it's online. It's about $5 a month. And especially with food, one of the places where people really trip themselves up is I couldn't think of how many times we wound up getting carry out or take out food, or before my boy Little Money was around, going out to dinner just because we hadn't planned anything for dinner that night.
Mm-hmm.
So, or that I wound up, buying lunch because I hadn't planned a menu that would produce leftovers that I could take to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of like infiltrated all parts of our budget, entertainment and personal spending, as well as food. And you look at it and go, man, that's a lot of money if you start to pluck out all those separate little pieces of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really score a lot of savings just by planning out a menu, and figuring out, okay, I'm going to make a double batch of this, and then I'll have this for lunch on Wednesday.
But that requires a big behavior change versus, as you mentioned earlier, just cutting out something from your cable bill.
Right. And so that's one of the things where you're going to have to decide, am I that kind of person? Sometimes I'm that kind of person, during October, my wife was out of town 1 week. I was out of town 2 weeks. Then my wife got pneumonia. There was a Boy Scout trip involved in there somewhere. I don't know what the heck we ate in October. I don't know how. I don't know how any food actually ever got into the house, let alone me sitting down, getting out the Kroger flyer.
Uh-huh.
Pulling out the coupons from the Red Plum insert on Sundays and saying, okay, well, we'll have this, and then we'll have chicken and rice, and then that'll be leftovers and, that kind of thing. So on the other hand, we did a lot of menu planning around the holidays, and we were just skating on leftovers.
Yay, dinner at Brian O'Connor's house tonight. Ann in Black Lick, you're on the air. Welcome, Ann.
Yes, also a fellow Detroiter. My parents both grew up during the Depression, and my mother got a double whammy. She got polio the year that her father died when she was 18.
Wow.
So the credo I lived by, even when my father was chairman of the board of the bank, we still lived by it. We paid off our house, which happens to be on the Detroit River with a dock, by the way, in 10 years. is buy
Are you
cash.
Listing it?
No, I'm not renting it. I can get a hell of a lot more in rent than I can if I live there. You buy cash, and until you can buy cash, you do without. When I first came down to Columbus, I slept on the floor with a refrigerator and a washing machine in a rental apartment for 3 years until
wow.
I accumulated enough to actually go out and on the interest from my banking account, buy the other thing.
Well, Anne, now you're a freak of nature.
No, I'm not.
There are a lot of people.
What put me through college was houses. My father would buy houses, and we'd fix them up. And sure, he drove a Lincoln, and Mom had a Caddy. But I also can putty windows. I can wire. The guy from Jess Howard was astonished when I moved into a fixer-upper because he came through, looked at it, and said, "Where the hell did you learn to do this?" And I said, "My father."
Well, that is an important thing. I mean,
we
got a new refrigerator, and the guys wanted $150 to hook up the ice maker. And my father, who grew up in a family of 10 during the Depression, is no longer with me. And my wife said, "So should I tell him to do it?" And I said, "My father would climb out of his grave and slap me silly if I paid somebody $150 to hook up an ice maker." So I know exactly where you're coming from. I feel guilty when I pay to get my oil changed because I'm like, you know how to do this. It's not hard. And so you kind of have to balance time versus money. But sometimes you also have to look at sort of a time budget and say, well, what am I really doing? Am I spending 2 hours on Facebook, every afternoon? Then why am I paying somebody to cut my lawn?
Hmm.
You know, bonus, if you cut your own lawn, you can probably skip the gym membership too. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that. But, you know, you have to be, again, motivated. You were really motivated by staying away from debt. Whereas for other people, they have to sort of change their mind about that and get away from debt as sort of a lifestyle. But for most people, you know, your living expenses are probably being paid in cash anyway. And those are the like I said, those are the bills that you're paying all the time that you're writing checks for. And those are the things where you really want to say, I can live with the generic pot pie, you know?
Okay. And thanks for that call. If anybody else has something to contribute to our discussion today on that New Year's resolution of getting your finances in order, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm talking with Brian O'Connor, syndicated columnist and personal finance editor at the Detroit News and author of the book, The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. I thought you made a good point in an early December column about holiday spending and the point that it's not just about what goes under the tree and how much people spend on decorations and the fresh wreath on the front door, and it goes on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I got in quite a bit of trouble about one of those. My wife got a $16 painted poinsettia from the Boy Scouts.
Uh-huh.
And my son's birthday is in early December, and a neighbor gave him a remote control helicopter, which I helped him set up, and I promptly flew it directly
into
the poinsettia.
Oh, it was you who flew it. Okay, I missed that.
Yes, yes. Well, I handed the remote control to the kid as soon as my wife started to turn on the laser death eyes. You know, your wife is never finds it as funny as you do, is one of the things that I've discovered in middle age. But yeah, $16 poinsettia, $25 wreath, $45 tree, replacing all the dead lights.
Mm-hmm.
We have a big Christmas party for all our friends, and that can be quite an expense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you have to add all that stuff up. Stamps.
Yep.
If you still mail a lot of Christmas cards, if you're one of those people who's doing 100 Christmas cards, you're forking over a pretty good chunk of change at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, are you getting the cards printed? You're buying them all that stuff. You know, a lot of people actually, you know, kind of split it. And, you know, the dollar store is a great source for that kind of stuff. So, you know, get your gift at Neiman Marcus, but get your wrapping paper at the dollar store. Mm.
The ornament thing, you know, people, I think I did that for years and years and years, and now I have enough ornaments for 3 trees.
Right.
And I do, too, trees, because I love them. But this year, for the first time, I no ornaments, none. No new ornaments, I should say.
No, oh.
Because they're just everywhere. Ornament? No new ones. I didn't buy a single one, new one.
Yeah, I know. You find yourself branching out into multiple trees, and then you're sitting there at the lot going, am I going to spend $150 on Christmas trees? So for my wife got sort of a wrought iron Christmas tree tabletop thing that just hangs the ornaments.
Right.
She got that on a post-Christmas special a few years ago. So that's allowed us to sort of offload that stuff.
Right.
But, yeah, you can, I mean, you can wind up with the holidays with gifts being, in some cases, the least part of your budget. You've got plane tickets for some people and hotel bills if you're visiting relatives, you know, parking at the airport, all that kind of jazz, you know, plus... you know, whatever else you, if you're having, you know, we're having a big Christmas party, so we always, you know, decide the week before that, oh my God, we have to take this wall out, you know. So you may have all kinds of crazy stuff that gets added to your Christmas budget, and there's nothing wrong with that if you can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, you want to set your priorities of what's important to you. And I would rather give a few less gifts and have a big blowout party for all my friends, because that's a little more important to me. As long as I can budget and plan for it. It's the sort of unconscious spending, you know, where you go to mail the Christmas cards and you put $40 of stamps on your credit card and you forget about the tree. And so you put a $60 tree mm-hmm. and some lights at Home Depot on your credit card and then, you know, so on and so forth. And suddenly you're like, wow, how'd this balance get so high? I thought I budgeted for Christmas, but all you really budgeted for was gifts.
I have enough money. I have enough wrapping paper to last till Kingdom Come now because I thought I didn't have any, and I bought one of those big fat rolls, and I had 2 big fat rolls already at home. I don't know why I have this hang-up about wrapping paper. Email from listener writes, every time I go shopping, stores like Kohl's and Macy's give me a receipt that proudly tells me I have saved a bunch of money. I tried to save that savings amount, but it seemed hard, and I almost feel like it's not real savings. What do you think of the savings at stores? Are things really on sale that much?
Well, it depends. I mean, you need to know. It's, you know, especially in retail, some of those, you know, discounts can just be discounts because things were marked up. So, you know, it's not like the grocery store where things are going to be in season or out of season. Although I did see a terrific, there's a terrific list over at a website called lifehacker.com where they went and compiled, you know, the best time of the year to buy everything when things are on sale. Like you should probably start your boat shopping, you know, this week, if you can. And so that's an important thing to know. But yeah, I mean, if you're, I always find it ironic when you get the receipt and it says you have saved, you know, 16%. Well, all I really did was spend money, you know, and if I need that stuff and I'm going to use it, then that's a good thing. But obviously I shouldn't buy it just because it's on sale.
The go broke saving money thing.
Right. You know, ooh, I saved $16. If I buy $1,000 more, I'll save another $300. No, you won't. You'll spend another $1,000. But I wouldn't take an individual store's word for it. You know, comparison shop. It's easier than ever at this point, especially online. And no. You know, another thing is if you're kind of an impulse shopper type, you know, you want to engage in a little bit more sort of behavior modification where, you know, go to the store, see it, maybe write it down, take out your cell phone and take a little picture, but don't buy it that day. And then, you know, go home and think about it and think about your alternative uses for that money.
Do you do that? Do you actually do all this? Because I think sometimes people listen to people like you. And think, oh, come on.
I don't do it all the time.
Do you get letters from readers who say, give me a break?
You know, I didn't. I've gotten one or two letters from people who talked about, you know, one of the things that I did in the book as I got towards the end, you know, big things like your car and your house.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole, if you've already bought those,
yeah,
and you're in, you know, you're into the payment cycle, there's not a lot you can do. You can refinance your car or your house. You can. A lot of people don't know you can refinance auto loans at your credit union, and credit unions are a great place to do that. I've seen people save significant amounts of money, especially if they had some high-interest dealer financing. You know, the only places that I could really find to economize on those things was what I was spending in maintenance, which in some cases was a couple hundred dollars a month when I looked back over the previous 6 months of spending.
Mm-hmm.
So it was much better for me to cut that to $100 a month by setting $100 a month aside for auto repairs and some other amount aside for home repairs. And, you know, and somebody said, you know, hey, that this is bogus because that's not really spending. And I'm like, look, it's real spending. I have the real bills from the six previous months that, you know, and that money had to come out of somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to write that check to the furnace repair guy. So it was real money and it really hurt. And it would have been much better if I had been in the previous year putting $100 a month into a separate savings account, which, again, is also really easy to do if you use online banking.
Automatic withdrawal.
Yeah, automatic withdrawal. Yeah. You can categorize it. I use, it used to be ING.com. Now it's Capital360.com. You can create all kinds of little sub-accounts for your vacation or your auto repairs or, you know, mm-hmm. your yacht down payment, you know, with that big public radio money.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever. And yeah, it's a little bit of a mental game, but it's also, you know, it's also real money
mm-hmm.
when you have to write that $400 check to be able to go online and say, okay, transfer $400 from my savings account to my checking account to cover this furnace repair bill. And you've only really been spending $100 a month. To me, that's real because that's about how much money is left in your bank account at the end of the month.
My guest is Brian O'Connor, syndicated columnist for personal finance editor at the Detroit News and author of the book, The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. If you want to share your story of success or failure in personal finances in terms of resolutions for the new year, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with a syndicated columnist and personal finance editor at the Detroit News, Brian O'Connor. We're talking about those New Year's resolutions. If they involve personal finance for you and you want to share it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page, you can post your question or comment there as well. I thought this was interesting. It sounds like the nation's headed in the right direction. As of November 2013, the average credit card debt for every household is steadily declining.
Well, that's because a lot of people went bankrupt the last couple of years.
Oh, okay.
And they don't have no credit.
Yeah.
But I think it is. I think we are going to see one of these things where, like the previous caller mentioned about, you know, her family having grown up in the Depression and being very debt averse. I think we're going to see that again. I think there are going to be a lot of kids who were in high school when dad went to work one morning and came home laid off, or, you know, mom went to the office as a full-time worker and came home as a part-time worker, who are going to say, yeah, you know, I remember when, you know, it was tough to bring money into our family and we were sending $200 a month out to Visa when we needed it. To try and keep our credit afloat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people will be doing that going forward. And you know, and it's not a bad thing at all. I mean, I think there are times in your life. I mean, I'm paying off credit card debt right now from, you know, the last couple of years that things have been terrible for people, and it's certainly, you know, no shame if people have gone into debt or even into foreclosure or bankruptcy, because in many cases it was no fault of your own. You know, you didn't ruin the economy and your job. But I think that people are probably getting a sort of a renewed appreciation that there's no such thing as good debt if it means that at the end of the month you've got to take money and pay it to somebody instead of using it to get what you want. So, you know, other than a reasonable house or a car payment, it should be a goal. If you're using Visa or MasterCard to get through your monthly living expenses or to support a lifestyle that you really can't afford, then that's a good New Year's resolution right there, is to just end the month, you know, with a dollar more than you had coming in, you know, with a dollar left from your income, because right there you'll be doing better than a whole bunch of people. But while credit cards are getting better, look at what's getting worse. We're seeing 7-year car payments now.
Yeah.
Seven-year car loans. The average price of a car sold this year was about $33,000.
That's the average price?
I think that was the average that I saw.
Okay.
Now, being from Detroit, I think this is a fabulous thing. Because you should all go out and buy a couple of new cars tomorrow.
Yeah, but you don't. Nowadays, I mean, you really don't have to spend that much money to get a decent car.
No, and the other thing is, I mean, it's going to wind up sort of biting the auto industry on the tail, because it means that people are not trading in those cars if they've got a 7-year loan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already seeing cars staying on the road for 11 years. But, you know, the good news is that you cannot really get a lemon. You cannot get a really stinky car anymore. The average car that you're going to buy
right. Is
going to run for a good long time without too many problems, and it means that used cars are a better buy than ever. And you know, if you're finding yourself the only way you can afford a car is with a 7 or 8 year payment, then you really need to think about things. Nobody needs a heated steering wheel that badly.
Let's go to Annie and Powell. You're on the air. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I love this discussion. Also a former Detroiter. I have a question about the part of your family's budget that was, I guess, like the groceries or more general household, like everything that it kind of takes to run a household. Where was it before? And you don't have to give real numbers, but because you talked a little bit about it's easy to change your cable bill because you do it just once. But
right.
Where was it kind of before you started this process, and where did it end up? And realizing that, you know, some months it's going to go back and forth.
I want actual numbers. Okay.
Okay, sure.
Grocery stuff? You know,
thank you,
I'm
Annie.
Embarrassed to say I may not have a copy of my own book in front of me here. Where there was a copy of the darn thing around here someplace. I didn't. The thing that was interesting on doing this on a week-to-week basis, I did not get the typical benefit that you get from a system like the Grocery Game, because of the way that we were tracking our spending, or the way that I was tracking our spending.
Mm-hmm.
So dining out was any eating out was entertainment, even if it was hitting the drive-thru at McDonald's. Lunches were part of personal spending. So our food bill was really just our household food bill. And to do that, you really need to go a couple months of sort of systematically sort of stocking up the pantry and the freezer.
Oh, okay.
And before you start to really see that gains. But in my bookkeeping was pretty sketchy. I mean, I wound up saving about 40 bucks a month on groceries. But again, I was only doing it for about 2 weeks at that point. I'll bet this week we probably don't have to buy anything except milk and some vegetables for the next 3 or 4 days because of sort of planned stuff that we've done with in fact, I wound up making a whole pasta salad the other day with a 99-cent box of pasta because we had some stuff that was getting ready that I was afraid would go bad in the refrigerator.
Oh, boy, that doesn't sound
so.
Wait a minute.
No,
stop
no,
the dinner at Brian's idea.
You cook it all up and package it up and freeze it. What are you?
Oh, Stan and Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Stan.
Hi. I've got a couple questions and a couple comments. Besides saving money, I am concerned that people do not have a will, do not have a durable power of attorney for health care, do not have a durable power of attorney for money, that sort of thing. And so what I've done is I've written a last letter to my wife and a last letter to my children in case Becky...
Well, my wife has written a lot of last letters to me, but I always talk her out of it in the garage.
But anyway, in case we're both killed in a car accident, then the kids need to know the stuff. And so what I have in that is, okay, who has the last will, or you know, our will, our living, and who has all the, you know, that sort of stuff.
I know Becky.
And also, do you list where the bank accounts are, where the brokerage accounts are, my house in Florida. You know, my boat in somewhere in Chillicothe or wherever it is. So you need to list all that stuff. So in case
and you need all your accounts and your passwords and your usernames and all that jazz. And it is true. I mean, those are in fact that's one of the things I talk about in the book in the scintillating chapter on life insurance, which to me was really a downer because it turned out I was paying as much for life insurance every month as I paid for entertainment. And I was just like, this is just not fair. I am betting on my own death to the same extent that I, you know, go to the movies or whatever. And it is. Now, a lot of this stuff, you know, you can get often from your state attorney general's office or places online. You can get a living will. You can, you know, there are will services online, and all these kinds of things. There's a great thing at the, Wall Street Journal, the 25 documents you need when you die, that talks about all this stuff. And it is, it's an incredibly complicated thing that if you've ever had a relative, die without this stuff organized, you know, I say, you know, there's an old belief that you're not really dead until the last person on earth says your name for the last time. And people will be saying your name forever. You will be damn near immortal because they will be spending the next 10 years going through your file cabinets, you know, looking for the receipt to the safe deposit box with grandma's wedding ring or, you know, figuring out, you know, whatever happened to that boat grandpa used to have, you know, it's in storage and been auctioned off in, you know, Westvalia or something.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, that was a good idea, Stan. Thanks a lot. I want to get to some other callers. I know Stan had a lot he wanted to talk about, but Tim.
Stan made a lot of good points. Thanks for calling,
Stan. Tim in Columbus, you're on the air with Brian O'Connor. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I apologize if I comment on something that's already been covered. I've been listening on and off while I'm working today, but I've really enjoyed it so far. I've heard some great ideas. Specifically, I just want to comment on something I heard recently about the multiple accounts.
That Brian was talking about as far as stashing money, yeah?
Right, right. And if I can, I don't want to steal any thunder from your guests. Is it okay if I mention another financial expert?
Sure. Brian can take it, can't you, Brian?
I can take it.
Okay.
I think you probably have a similar philosophy from what I've heard. My wife and I did the Financial Peace University program through Dave Ramsey at our church.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yes. I'd say Dave and I overlap on a lot of, not on everything.
Yeah.
But on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And same for me. I mean, I don't follow everything that he says to the letter, but I kind of pick and choose my pieces from different experts, and I'll definitely be looking into your book. But what I want
to comment on... Great, you can buy it at funnymoneyblog.com at a discount.
That's
funnymoneyblog.com, Ohio.
Okay.
Great. But what you said about the envelope, you know, or I'm sorry, you said account. Ramsey's approach is envelope. You know, and his tagline is talking about old-fashioned budgeting, pretty much like your grandmother used to do. And in
my mom actually did this when she first got married after the war, you know, the big one. And I think my father got paid in cash by Michigan Bell, and he would get two 20s and two $2 bills. They actually had a truck that came around and paid the guys in cash if they wanted back in those days.
Okay.
And in fact, I keep three. We have four envelopes at home. We have the sitters, the entertainment cash, and then each of our personal spending. And
right.
I'm telling you, it's physically painful, psychologically, physically painful to spend cash.
Right.
Anything that you do that involves spending cash, you know, there's like this little caveman portion of your brain that goes, mm-hmm. oh, my God, this is real money.
Right.
Who knows when I'll see another one of these guys again.
Tim, do you do that?
Right. Well, no, actually, we don't. And I understand that, like you said, the psychological effect of that is very important. But for my wife and I, our real problem, we've always been pretty good savers. So we weren't really doing it to save or get out of debt. We're already out of debt. We're just trying to sort of streamline things. And what I found was I could make what I consider my virtual envelope. So in other words, I follow that philosophy to some extent, but rather than having a physical envelope in my house, because I don't want a lot of cash around my house, I just made, in fact, I have like 16 different accounts through my credit union, getting another plugin for credit unions. They're great. And I do everything online. And in fact, I actually set up automatic transfers every month.
That is a beautiful way to go, and people, it is safer in terms of security, and there's nothing wrong. You can have as many bank accounts as you want, and it usually boosts your credit score a little bit. Like I said, some of the big online banks will allow you to create sub accounts within one online money market account or something like that. And, you know, there's a certain amount of, because when you're setting that goal, whatever it's going to be, you know, there's a certain amount of just psychological satisfaction of starting to watch that money pile up in the vacation account or, you know, the Disney World account or whatever it's going to be, that sort of, after a while, it's very motivating.
You know, it makes me wonder, and Tim, thank you for your call. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. How many people like Tim? Tim sounds like he completely has his act together. Everybody who's called in sounds like they have their act together.
I'm not Susie Orman. I won't shame you. I want to call and hear about you. Come on, somebody who's like a financial train wreck.
Someone
give
who's
us a call,
fallen
right?
of our, yeah, we don't have enough time for that. But
you don't have to use your real name.
Yeah. I wonder how many people are listening or how many people turn off the radio when they know we're talking about this because they're like, I can't dig it. I don't want to talk about that. It's too depressing.
Who does want to? But you know what? It's not, you know, people say, well, it's not that hard to get out of debt. It's not that hard to pay attention to your money. Well, you know what? It's just a lot easier to screw it up, especially if you haven't had good financial role models.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the next time you see an ad on TV for having a 3-month emergency fund, you know, I will eat my entire book.
Yeah. Good point.
You know, what you see is ads for Caribbean vacations mm-hmm. because a certain credit card is everywhere you want to be,
mm-hmm.
Or that you get frequent flyer points. You know, yeah, you get frequent flyer points, but you owe 3 months' salary
and speaking
that you're paying interest on.
Yeah, speaking of cars, that Rose Bowl, lots of car commercials during the Rose Bowl.
Whoa, yes.
Who won the Rose Bowl again? I'm sorry.
Some kind of local boys, I think. Somebody not from your institution, I'm
Brian O'Connor. No, it's not OSU. It was MSU, Michigan State University. Brian O'Connor, we have run out of time again, and we'll have to get back to it another time.
That's fabulous, and if people want to, you know, keep up, we've got the $1,000 challenge starting January 6th, Monday, at AOL.com, and my book's in any fine bookstore, and the way you know it's a fine bookstore is that it has my book.
Okay.
If it doesn't, then it's a crappy bookstore.
And the name of the book
you should
is
not shop there.
The $1,000 Challenge, How One Family Slashed Its Budget Without Moving Under a Bridge or Living on Government Cheese. Brian O'Connor, personal finance editor at the Detroit News, thanks again for joining us. Take care.
And Merry New Year to everybody at WOSU.
Thank you very much. And thanks for listening. Happy New Year to you. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.